Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back at it is Eaton. To the track. To the wall. It's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center. And he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
The 2-2 now. Check swing on the slider, strike three. Chris Archer jumps off the mound and bounces his way to the dugout.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to our show. This week, we'll sit down with one Brad Miller. We'll visit with Brian Anderson of Fox Sports Sun. Look at the minors with Durham manager Jared Sandberg. Plus, we'll look at the national scene with Richard Justice of MLB.com. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our featured guest this week is shortstop Brad Miller. Brad, welcome to the program. First, tell me what it's been like. Here we are a few months into the season. Your adjustment to coming from Seattle to the Rays. Now you've had close to half a year.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Getting to know a whole new organization, group of guys has been pretty good. Everybody's been really welcoming, and I'm enjoying it. So we have a really good group of guys, and we have our best baseball ahead of us, I think.
When you found out you were coming this close to home, what did it mean to you?
I was excited for the opportunity. I think the Rays definitely welcomed me with open arms from day one and told me they believed in me. So that was huge. And also, being close to home is pretty cool, having, it'd be so convenient for my family and friends to come down and see me.
I'm sure when you got the news, you probably got your fair share of texts. How many tickets have you been asked of since coming? Or maybe not in terms of number, but has been more or less than you anticipated when you got dealt here?
I think it was definitely exciting when I got traded, so everybody kind of checking in, but, my parents, I'm lucky. My parents were able to come to a lot of the games, when we were, on the road in Seattle. So tickets haven't been too crazy. I let my dad kind of take care of all that and so I can just focus on baseball. So that's been a big relief.
It seems that you've gotten better as the year has gone on. Was there a point, I know you said they welcomed you with open arms, but it's natural to maybe try and do a little too much once the regular season starts. When did you feel totally comfortable from that realm? Because I think your play has gotten better each passing day.
I think the biggest thing when you start, like you said, you want to get off to a good start regardless of, your situation. And, when you don't, I think you want to kind of do too much, but that's what I'm learning. It's a long year, and there's certain things you got to do as far as hitting and defensively. You got to put yourself in good positions, and when you do that more consistently, I think the results kind of come with it.
What's been the biggest change or adjustment that you had to make in coming to this organization? Obviously, they welcomed you, but it is a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is getting comfortable with everybody, but just knowing myself, I've learned. Through the ups and the downs of the past couple of years, I've learned a lot about, who I am as a player, what works for me, what doesn't. So I think, the ongoing battle is always just battling with consistency, being able to implement, those certain things every day and have the performance to go with it.
How about playing on turf? Because that's one thing you didn't do in Seattle. Is it much of an adjustment for an infielder? And if so, what's the biggest part of that?
Yeah, I really don't notice it too much, honestly. This is a great infield. I really like playing here. In the past when we would come, I didn't think it was too big of a difference from natural grass. But, they're very conscious of it, our trainers and everything. They don't want us running around too much out here. If we have to run or something, we'll get it done on the road. But it hasn't been awesome. The one thing I really like about playing here half the time is, we're inside. It's 70 degrees every day, no wind, no sun, so it's perfect. It's really good conditions.
Is it faster than grass, or the hops truer? I mean, and isn't it an adjustment then when you go back to grass?
I really don't notice too much. It might be, I think it honestly is pretty neutral. It's not overly fast. There's some places like Miami where Miami is really fast, and others like New York and Boston up north are a little slower. So each field kind of has its own characteristics. But, it's good that we have the familiarity with it here.
You mentioned, comfort level, knowing yourself. What do you know now about yourself, and who are you?
I think I think I got to play with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. You know, I find out, you know, when I'm a little angry and a little, mad, I tend to, lock in a little extra. So I think that's something for me is going out there and always being hungry and always, trying to do something today. I think in baseball we can focus on the past a lot, but it really, really doesn't mean anything. So, coming out there with that fire every day definitely helps my performance.
So when you're looking for that motivation or that chip, mm-hmm. what do you look for to use to – because sometimes it has to be manufactured when you're playing that many games.
For sure, and that's the funny thing about baseball is, it's so mental. So I think we have to play little mind games with each other and, talk ourselves into some things sometimes. And, whatever gets the job done is kind of, it definitely works.
Is there one you can share with us that you've used to manufacture something?
Nothing crazy. Teammates, when you're doing an interview that are, really bad at trying to get you, not very focused, but I'm locked in, so it doesn't even matter.
That's good to know. Again, Brad Miller with us on This Week in Rays Baseball. When you were growing up in the Orlando area, what got you inspired to play the game? What got you excited about baseball?
I think, my family, my dad, I grew up in a baseball family. He has, a love for the game and, just growing up, I was exposed to it, and it was something that, I loved and wanted to get involved with, and they were always so supportive of me. So, obviously in Florida, we got to play year-round, and that's something I always did. I mixed in a little bit of basketball or some other sports, but I was pretty much, baseball all the time.
Shortstop all the time?
Yep, pretty much.
Who was a shortstop you grew up watching and wanting to be like when you were a kid?
Derek Jeter, that was the guy. Once I realized what a shortstop was and what it meant to be a shortstop and a leader, I think, you didn't have to look any further than Derek Jeter.
Because you grew up not far from Ken Griffey Jr., yeah. So I was curious if you ever...
That was my guy, Ken Griffey Jr., being a left-handed hitter. Everybody my age, I'm pretty sure it was either Ken Griffey Jr. or Chipper Jones, where I was from. So he was pretty special.
That's why I was curious if it was always center shortstop where you ever wanted to be a center fielder too.
No, I just always grew up playing short, but definitely wanted to hit some left-handed homers like Griffey.
What interaction, if any, did you have with him growing up, and what are your greatest memories of that?
I didn't. His son played at the same little league as I did, so I saw him there a couple times, but I didn't get to meet him until I was with the Mariners, actually. I'm in the big leagues, and we're just talking, about back home, about Windermere, just a normal dude. And I was super, super intimidated, but he is the biggest prankster and goofy guy. So it was pretty cool. Something I'll never forget.
So it lived up to expectations or more?
Oh yeah. Every time I talked to him or would see him in the clubhouse, I'm like, all right, I'm just casually saying hi to Ken Griffey Jr., talking to him. And he's, treating me like, somebody he's played with forever. So he's great.
You mentioned your dad. He played college baseball. Your sister was a pretty good softball player, too. Was there any sibling rivalry growing up or supportive? How would you describe it?
Very, supportive. I went to, all her games, and she probably sat through way too many baseball games. But, she ended up playing softball, for a while and basketball in high school. And I was definitely the little brother that was there running around and watching her.
You sound like you're somewhat of a historian of the game. Would that be fair to say, based on the fact that you were a junior fan and you grew up on the game? And if so, are you, do you think?
I'm a baseball rat. Yeah, that's, they give me a hard time in there. But, if guys ask me questions about something, if I don't know it, I'll usually just make it up. And they kind of believe me because, I've gained some credibility.
Best story you've made up?
Oh, shoot. I don't know.
You can share.
I don't know. Just kind of whatever comes to mind, and then I'll have to admit to it later. I don't want them to, Google fact check me or something.
You haven't gotten someone to fall for it and led to a prank or anything like that? You haven't returned the favor?
Nope, nothing crazy.
Logan Morrison, we had him on our last show, and I talked to him about his professionalism during what was certainly a very, very difficult stretch. How much has it helped you to have a guy you're familiar with when you came over here? Because most guys get traded and don't have that.
No doubt. Logan and Farquhar, and then obviously having a couple other guys here that I played with the Mariners. It's huge. They know what I'm all about. I know what they're all about. And, Logan just being, a more experienced player, he's, kind of a guy who's, seen, you know, more than I have, it is good to see, you know, how he handles himself through the ups and the downs. Same with Longo, Logan, you know, Forsyth, a bunch of these guys. It's really big for a young player and a guy to see how to do things the right way.
On the field a couple weeks ago, it was Orlando that was recognized here, and the Rays helped contribute $300,000 to the Victims Fund. I'm curious what that meant to you and being, you know, from that area.
Yeah, it was special. You know, obviously, you know, any of the support that we could have given, you know, was huge, and the Rays doing this was huge, you know, just to kind of help out in a time of need and time of tragedy. And definitely that night, it was, I think we were, you know, all inspired out there, and it was pretty cool to get to wear the Orlando Rays hat and, you know, show our support.
You've had probably some special moments in your career. That was, you know, certainly had to rank up there. What are some of your best moments on the field?
Oh, I think, just thinking real quick, last year getting to play in a no-hitter, it was pretty cool. Iwakuma threw a no-hitter in Seattle. You know, moments like that, I remember, you know, where you're just so – just pulling for one of your teammates so much. You know, any walk-off win is always fun. You know, getting a walk-off win here, Kurt hit the single. I remember that was in one of my, I guess, first 20 games here. Just a lot of them. But the no-hitter was pretty cool, because that's obviously doesn't happen every day. And seeing somebody go out and dominate. It was against the Orioles, too. I mean, great offensive lineup. That was pretty special.
Chatting with Brad Miller on This Week in Rays Baseball. And, Brad, you know, you mentioned trying to kind of get yourself psyched up or motivating yourself, carrying a chip from game to game to allow you to focus. You can't be baseball 24/7. So when you leave the field to relax, what kind of things do you like to do?
Big TV show guy. You know, like to watch TV shows, binge watch, you know, some series, and then come here to the field and talk about it with the guys. You know, kind of gives you something just to kind of relax and, you know, get your mind off baseball and rest up.
Favorite TV series then?
Game of Thrones.
You're addicted? Or?
Yeah. I mean, it's the best show on TV, for sure.
So if a couple of years from now, because I'm sure you've heard they're, you know, it may be done. Yeah. So what's next in line?
I don't want to think about that. You know, I just want to ride the wave while I can. But I have a solid stable of TV shows in rotation right now. So I'm set. I got some depth.
Since you're the clubhouse expert, then it sounds like give me your depth chart after number one. What's two and three?
Well, Steve Pierce is also pretty. I mean, that guy's pretty locked in. He's probably might be the expert, but other ones, Silicon Valley is awesome. Modern Family, Breaking Bad, Bloodline is a good one. Also, The Leftovers. There's about anything HBO does is pretty good, and Netflix, you can get lost for sure.
Well, hopefully you continue to stay as locked in on the field as you are with those shows, and hopefully continued success during the course of this 2016 season. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's Brad Miller on This Week in Rays Baseball. We continue right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. Neil Solon's with you, joining you from the Rays Radio Studio across from Gate 1. And joining us right now to discuss the week gone by from the main booth at the ballpark is Brian Anderson of Fox Sports Sun. B.A., thanks for a few minutes.
Neil, thanks for having me again. But instead of talking about last week, can we talk about maybe what's going to happen this week in a positive light?
Let's try and do that. Let's kind of mix and match, and we'll start with yesterday and Blake Snell, because I thought what he said after the game was maybe more important than what he did during, and the fact that he said, I need to pitch inside more to make my off-speed stuff work, and there is more in the tank, and I need to throw more quality strikes. And I thought that was about as accountable a postgame as I've heard during the course of the season.
Without a doubt. Absolutely without a doubt. And that's what will allow Blake Snell to reach his ceiling, because let's face it, Blake Snell's ceiling is very, very high. Tall, lanky left-hander with his kind of stuff. He's got the stuff to be able to go out and dominate each and every time he takes them out. Now, when you combine it with a mindset that says, I'm not good enough right now, I need to get better, I need to be more efficient, and this is how I'm going to go about doing it, I love that. I love that he has a plan, and I love that that plan involves pitching inside. We don't see that a whole lot around the league right now, guys pitching inside. inside, you know, for strikes and for effect, to move guys off the plate, to make them uncomfortable. There's nothing worse than a hitter getting into the batter's box and having a comfortable at bat. And all of a sudden you see those pitches that we talk about, well, that was a pretty good pitch. You know, it was a couple inches off the plate, it was down, but they're diving out there so aggressively that they're able to get to it and hurt you. And a lot of times that's because you don't pitch in enough. So I think if a guy like Blake Snell goes out there with the mindset that that whole plate is mine, inside, outside, up and down, with his kind of stuff, and continues to work on his craft, I can't wait to see what he can become.
And not only that, I think the as you would probably agree, BA, with all the time you spent playing at the big league level, that how important is it for a guy to really have a really good ability to self-evaluate and realize what he needs to improve on?
Neil, it goes outside the game of baseball. It really is in everybody's job. Anything that you do, if you are not an honest self-evaluator, you will fail. You will, or at the very worst, you will fail. At the very minimum, you will be mediocre and never really get any better, because you can't look in the mirror and say, you know what? I need to get better. And I know that maybe there's some circumstances that are working against me. I got to find a way to deal with that. I've got to find a way to supersede that and to be able to overcome that. And if you cannot honestly self-evaluate yourself and look at where you need to improve, take accountability, take responsibility, you will never achieve what you're capable of. And I don't care if you're a plumber. I don't care if you're a baseball player, football, basketball, teacher. It doesn't really matter. That accountability, it means everything. And so to hear Blake Snell talk like that lets you know this kid's got a chance.
Well, his locker is next to Alex Cobb, and Alex threw another bullpen earlier this morning, is close to starting a rehab assignment. Would it be fair to say that he's the guy that maybe the Rays have missed of all the injured players this year?
Sure. I mean, first of all, on the mound, you know, what Alex Cobb brings to the mound as far as being able to go out and pitch deep into games, pitch winning baseball, be effective and lead his team to victory in that way, but also what he brings from the example that he sets. I mean, he is a bulldog. He's not an excuse maker. He's a guy that's going to accept responsibility. He's going to work the right way. He's going to talk the right way. You know, he's just one of those guys. He's a pro. You know, he's a throwback. He's a guy that when I think about some of the pitchers that I, you know, was fortunate enough to play with and teams that I played on, Alex Cobb would have fit in very nicely on those teams because he's a throwback type of player, old school, gritty, and, you know, just a great example for any pitcher to look up to, especially a starting pitcher. And I don't think it's any coincidence at all that Blake Snell is lockered up next to Alex Cobb. That is by design for sure.
And hopefully he starts that rehab real soon. Again, Alex threw another bullpen this morning. You mentioned you don't want to talk much about what happened this week, but the team has dropped 15 of 17 right now. From a player standpoint, how difficult is that mentally to kind of get beyond that and just worry about today?
It's very difficult. There's no question. It's very difficult. It's like, you know, when you come into the clubhouse, you know, whether it's on the road or here at home, you walk in and it's just a remembrance of bad feelings from the night before, the night before that, the night before that. It's very difficult, and it takes mentally tough guys and a mentally tough team, a very resilient team, to be able to overcome that. And I think the way that you do that is you know, we go back to the self-evaluation. What can I do to make this team better? And a lot of times that's just do your job. I mean, do your job and do it well. So what do I need to improve on? You know, is it extra BP? Is it more ground balls? Is it working on an off-speed pitch, in my bullpen? I mean, what is it? What do I need to do to get better? And you focus on what you need to do, take care of your business, and really it comes down to one pitch at a time. If you're a pitcher, it comes down, you know, if you're a fielder, you're locking in on every single pitch that's delivered and getting ready to make a move and focusing on what you can do to help the team and trying to make it as simple as possible, because, you know, that cloud, like I said, it tends to hang over you when you get to the number of losses that this team has in the last, you know, 2.5-3 weeks. It's very difficult to deal with, but you've got to be mentally tough, and you've just got to keep plugging away and understand you know, there's no time off. Baseball is an every single day, you know, occurrence. And so you're going to have to come out and keep plugging away. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. How tough are you going to be, and what kind of adjustments will you make to get back on the winning side?
So, B.A., we got about a minute on this. So Chris Archer tries to start that today. What does Chris need to do in your mind to be able to get the ball rolling for him?
Well, first of all, it starts with quick starts. You know, it's well documented his first inning struggles. So, you know, that's where maybe you need to make an adjustment in how you warm up before a game. I know Chris has said, listen, I've been doing this the same way for years, and that's fine. But obviously the first inning has been an issue. So a quick start for him to come out ready to go, because his quick starts are not because he doesn't have a very good game plan put together. Most of the time when he struggled early on, it's because the command isn't there. So he's got to refine that command in the bullpen, maybe simulate a couple of hitters, maybe simulate an inning before he comes into the game, and then quick start, because once that happens, then he tends to be able to settle in the middle part of the game and let his stuff go to work. And outside of that, execute pitches. Be consistent with your execution. That's what we saw early on last year from Chris Archer when he dominated Major League Baseball. And since then, some of that command has, you know, gone away a little bit. The fastball command has not been as good, and that therefore the off-speed pitches haven't been as effective or sharp. And so that's where he's run into some trouble. So I think if he has a quick start and good fastball command, everything will fall into place, and he gives you a chance to have a real nice outing and get out of this series with a win.
B.A., thanks again. As usual, good stuff. Enjoy the game.
All right. Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it.
That's Brian Anderson of Fox Sports Sun. Before we continue, let's pause for station identification on the Rays Baseball Network.
This is Tampa Bay Sports Radio.
To the wall! Gone!
620 WDAE St. Petersburg and 95.3 FM, home of the Rays.
Neil Solon's with you on This Week in Rays Baseball. Right now it's time to take a look at the Rays minor league system. AAA Durham had two players named to the AAA All-Star Game. And joining us to chat about it, Bulls manager Jared Sandberg, joining us from Norfolk, Virginia. Jared, thanks very much for a few minutes.
Yeah, not a problem, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the two All-Stars, Austin Pruitt and Dylan Floro. What has made each of their seasons special and then deserving of the opportunity to play in an All-Star Game?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting for both those guys. I'll start with Dylan Floro. He, you know, a different role this year. Last year, late in the season, he was moved to the bullpen, and he's excelled coming out of the bullpen this year. He's pitching a couple different roles for us, some long relief, multi-inning stints. He's been at the back end of the games, closing out games as a closer. And now here recently, he's back to a multi-inning relief kind of guy. And, you know, he's a strike thrower, you know, an above-average sinker. And is able to get the ground ball when he needs to, but he's also learned how to pitch and expand the zone when he needs to. Because, like we saw yesterday, he came in the game and the first, I think, eight strikes that he threw were all swung at. So, you know, the league's starting to understand that he's a strike thrower. And once he learns to and understand and watch the game and know when the other team's swinging, that he can expand the zone with his power sinker and also his cutter. His cutter's has helped him out a lot. So he's had a fantastic season, and for him to make the All-Star team is pretty special. And then Austin Pruitt, you know, first year AAA, he's come in again, another strike thrower. Not the most intimidating guy out there on the mound, but he comes in and throws strikes with all his pitches. You know, he's pitched very, very well for us as well. And he's got a cutter, curveball, and changeup, and you know, he's throwing the changeup to righties, and it's been pretty cool to watch. That developed, but you know, just a guy that goes out and pitches and kind of ho-hum, and all of a sudden, you know, he's in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning, and he can really pitch. You know, the thing for Austin recently, and maybe over the course of the season this year, he's been giving up the home run, and when he keeps the ball in the ballpark, he's been really, really good.
Good stuff on both those guys. You've had some guys join you too, obviously, with all the injuries the Rays have had. You've had some guys promoted from AA, some because of injury and some because they're deserving of the chance. And it looks like Jake Faria has put together, aside from some rain in Norfolk, which interrupted one of his starts, two pretty good outings starting at the AAA level.
Yeah, I mean, for him to come up to AAA and do what he's done so far, I think it's nine innings so far. Hasn't given up a run. I think it's a strikeout per inning so far. The biggest issue was going to be fastball command, and he's come up here and he's commanded the fastball very, very well, and the off-speed has played. So I think he's going to be just fine, and it's fun to have him come up here and get off to a good start. I know it's probably going to help him relax a little bit and just pitch.
Another guy who's come up to AAA, who at one time was probably one of the Rays' higher-level prospects, and then injuries kind of took him off the radar a little bit, but it looks like by the numbers he's played very well for you since getting his first AAA chance, and that's utility player Jake Hager.
Yeah, Jake's come up here and hasn't missed a beat. He's come up here and swung the bat very, very well. Wasn't intimidated by the AAA level. He feels like he belongs. He's playing with a lot of confidence. And he knows the situation where, you know, there's other guys that have to play shortstop, there's other guys that have to play second base, so he's going to have to move around a little bit, so he's played some third base, and defense has been solid, and he's been all over the lineup for us, and you know, when he gets that fastball, it doesn't matter what the velocity is, he's going to be able to hit it and hit it pretty good. He's still making some adjustments to the secondary pitches, especially in some hitters' counts, but I think he's going to be just fine. He's a very good student of the game. And, you know, there's a reason why he was drafted in the first round like he was, and he's got some tools, and there's a chance that he'll be able to play in the big leagues hopefully for a long time.
I know he's a terrific kid. How has he been? You mentioned moving around. How has he been in terms of his movement defensively, having missed all of last year with a knee injury?
No issues whatsoever. I mean, he's fully healthy. I know we're trying to take it a little bit easy just because he has been out for a little while, and give him 5-6 days in a row of playing, and then give him a day off. And he, you know, he's chomping the bit. He doesn't want the days off. He just wants to play. And he's moving around just fine. He's able to run, steal some bases. So you know, for me, not being able to see him play very much throughout his career, and now to see him play, I don't see any ill effects from the injury.
That's great stuff. And great to hear. One other guy I wanted to touch on before we go, Jared, and that's Jamie Schultz. I know he didn't make the All-Star team, but I know he's well thought of by the organization and has certainly had some terrific moments in his first season in AAA on the mound.
Yeah, he's had a fantastic season so far. The fastball is magical, you know, up in the upper 90s, especially out of the starting role. Sometimes you tended to get off to some slow starts, but, you know, he was able to, not only physically but also mentally, be able to grind through some of those starts and pitch deep into the games. Fastball command was also an issue for him coming to AAA, and you know, the walk totals and all that stuff, and he's put all that behind him. You know, he's throwing strikes. He's throwing his changeup very, very well, and the curveball, I know, has gotten better since he's been here. He's put in some good work with Kyle Snyder, and that's worked very well for him. So he's off to a good start. You know, it's a little frustrating that he didn't make the All-Star team, but with where our team is in the standings, it's also understanding that only so many players can make it. So he was also deserving of making the All-Star team, and he's pitched very well this year.
Jared, great stuff. Best of luck today in Norfolk, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Again, that's the Durham manager, Jared Sandberg. Now, this week there were three players in the Rays system who were named to the Futures game, and all are in AA Montgomery. Willie Adames and pitchers Chi-Wei Hu and Ryan Stanek. And I caught up with Montgomery's hitting coach, Dan Dement, to discuss what makes Adames special.
There's so many things that make that kid special. He's at 20 years old, he's very mature. He's a very mature baseball player. In the sense that you know, he doesn't let adversity affect him. You know, he's able to turn the page quicker than most, and to do that at 20 years old is really a special thing to have. It's just a joy to be around that kid on a daily basis.
How about his skill set as a hitter? What are the talents that you most appreciate about him and about his work ethic on a day-to-day basis?
I mean, he's a really good worker. He's a really good worker. You know, this year we've developed a good routine, a daily routine that's important for his preparation on a daily basis, and it's paid off. You know, and as far as what kind of hitter he is, he's come so far. He's second in the league in walks right now. Him and Jake Bowers are right there neck and neck, and Casey Gillespie was leading it. And to have him being 20 years old and Jake also to be leading the league, the Southern League, and at the Double-A level in walks is unbelievable. It's not something that we preach. It's not something that we had a goal of in the beginning of the year, but he's taking what they give him for the most part. He's got good raw power. He's right now, he's a gap-to-gap, a gap power guy with, but, you know, he shows really good raw power, and I think that when he grows into that body, he's going to have some power one day.
And it seems like he's got a little flair for the dramatic, too. I know he came off the bench one day in the first half, had a pinch hit walk-off home run. It seems like he's had some big hits late in games during the course of the season, too. Is that his M.O.?
No, I tell you what, it's funny because it's almost like he lives for those situations. And every time he gets in that situation, no matter what, he locks in and gets the job done. It's fun to watch, and it's crazy because he can have a few bad at-bats against average pitching, get in the bullpen against one of their better arms, guys that have good stuff, and lock in and get the job done. It's crazy. It's just something that he has inside him. And he's got a knack. He's a winner. He's a great teammate, and he wants to win. And, you know, he never sulks when things go bad. He's always positive and never takes his offense defense, which is really nice to see.
And from that standpoint, how has the defense been, and how has he grown as a shortstop?
His defense has been really good. You know, he's improved immensely since the beginning of the year, just being catching the routine balls and making the routine outs. Every time a ground ball hits to him, we're all real confident. We almost don't even have to look. He's going to make the play. He's not real flashy. He doesn't try to be flashy. He just gets the job done.
And that is Montgomery hitting coach Dan DeMint on Willie Adames making the Futures game. I also spoke with Biscuits pitching coach R.G. Lichtenstein on Shiwei Hu and Ryan Stanek receiving the same honor, touching first on Hu.
You know, his competitiveness is probably the thing that sticks out the most. He's a kid who really puts in a solid day's work and works real hard to not only get into the transition of speaking English, which is new to him over the last couple of years, but just understanding the game and understanding how to beat hitters. He works real hard at his craft and is meticulous in his work, trying to get ready and be prepared so that every 5 days he has a chance to compete and be as good as he's been this year.
How about the stuff that he possesses? What are his strengths? Most of us have not seen him pitch yet.
You know, he commands the ball very well. His fastball command, he works down at the bottom of the zone as good as anybody on our staff. He locates both sides of the plate. He's got some good carry at the top of the zone, so he can beat hitters at the bottom of the zone and at the top of the zone. And he's got a good array of pitches. He's got a nice changeup that he can use at any time. His curveball is probably an early count pitch that is strike pitch that he'll use to soften the zone and separate speed. And slider is a developmental pitch right now that's probably the biggest key to his year of development, so to speak. He's trying to develop that to be a two-strike offering to go along with the fastball command and the changeup to give him three above-average pitches. And his ability to be an impact rotation guy at the big league level will be contingent on his ability to develop the slider to be a consistent two-strike pitch.
On the other side, you've got more of a power guy who just also was named to the Futures game in Ryan Stanek. He went from starter to reliever about a half dozen appearances ago, and the numbers are eye-popping. What can you say about his year?
The stuff is eye-popping. That's, you know, I had Ryan at the end of last year, and you know, we had to shut him down with the shoulder for a little bit. He had some ache. Throughout his time with the Rays, he's just dealt with durability issues and being healthy. And when we put him in the bullpen last year, he started to flash what we thought was some of the stuff we must have seen when we drafted him number one out of Arkansas. He was up at 96, sitting 94, and everything looked really impressive. His slider got a little sharper. And for me, even though we put him there out of necessity because of the injury, and it made sense, I kind of saw a glimpse of the future. When he showed up for spring training this year, he just looked like a different animal. He looked healthy. He looked confident. And from the first bullpen we saw in Port Charlotte, the ball was just exploding out of his hand, and all of a sudden we see him up at 97. His first start of the year, he touches 100 and sits consistently at 97, and that was after I was with him in the last preseason game where we had the split squad, and we went to Lakeland, and he hit 101 on the gun in Lakeland and pitched, you know, four innings and faced their starting lineup against the Tigers, and that kind of, I think that was really a confidence boost for him, and his stuff in the rotation was explosive the first time through the order. He would dominate hitters, and he would embarrass them, And then eventually, as a starter going 100 pitches, you can't keep that adrenaline rush going, and the stuff just isn't quite as sharp. It's still really good, but it doesn't have that same ability to embarrass a hitter, and good hitters that third time through start to cheat a little bit. So with him, it just started to make sense that he really would, you know, he'd punch out 9 guys in a game, but 7 of them were the first time through the order. And so in talking with Dick Bosman and Dewey Robinson and Mitch Lukovic, I recommended that we put him in the pen when the chance, you know, when it became available. And to the credit of the organization, they made the move, and he's really been fun to watch since, topping off, sitting 90, 98, 99, and really, you know, doing what we thought he would do, and embarrassing hitters and showing real dominant stuff for short spurts.
And that's Montgomery pitching coach R.C. Lichtenstein on the Futures Game. Reps Ryan Stanek and Chi-Wei Hu, the Futures Game a week from today. We'll have more on This Week in Rays Baseball after this on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Neil Solons. This week, David Price faced the Rays for the first time in a Boston uniform, and I sat down with Nick Cofardo of the Boston Globe to see what Price's adjustment has been like.
I think it's been a tough adjustment. I mean, he would say otherwise, that it's, you know, he's just mislocating pitches and things like that, but he's had probably more stinkers this year than he would normally have had at this point in the season, and probably doesn't have this many during the course of any season. So I think the adjustment period's been tough for him, and a couple of factors, obviously the big contract, the biggest contract for a pitcher ever, pretty much, and the Boston market. Often heard that guys who come to New York or Boston, you'll have a tough time that first year, and we certainly witnessed that in Boston with Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez that first year, and maybe David's going through that same kind of thing with the Red Sox so far.
And you can even go back to Carl Crawford, who certainly is a very different personality from a David Price, but it is certainly an adjustment going from a smaller market, whether it's Tampa Bay or Detroit or even Toronto. The media attention's a lot different. How has he handled all that? I know that he generally has been, David has always been media friendly.
Yeah, I agree. He's been great with the media. I mean, he's very accountable for his bad outings, and he's always there to talk, whether he's pitching or not pitching. You know, a lot of pitchers kind of hide during the week, and he's always right near his locker, ready to talk to anybody who wants to talk to him. So he's very good that way.
I think one of the things that, at least from an outsider's perspective, the hope was David not only would be a number one, but he has the reputation of influencing in a positive way young starters. And we saw in the first game of the Boston series the tough time that Eduardo Rodriguez has had this season, and then he was subsequently optioned down after the game. Are you surprised that the influence is not, I guess, yielded results for some of the other younger pitchers?
Yeah, in a way I am, but I think when you're struggling yourself, you know, it's hard for anything to rub off. And Eduardo's case, you know, he's been away from the team more than he's been with it, you know, especially being on the DL and then doing his rehab work in Pawtucket. And so he hasn't been around David all that much, you know. So I think once he comes back and is able to establish himself a little better, I think David will be an influence on him. It's just been one of those crazy years with the Sox pitching staff. They just have not done the job, and you can't blame that on David.
And you look at the rotation, the biggest surprise has been a guy who wasn't supposed to be in the rotation to begin with in Steven Wright, and I don't know who's an influence on a knuckleballer. I mean, as you know, those can come and go at times.
Yeah, he's really been something. I mean, he's had maybe 2 bad outings. His last one wasn't very good. But I've just seen this evolution of this guy. You know, the Red Sox just got him for Lars Anderson. They had no expectations for him whatsoever, really, when they obtained him. And he's just gotten better and better with that knuckleball, learned how to use it. Now he has a 10-mile variation between the 3 knuckleballs he has. He throws his fastball at 86 to 88 miles an hour and throws a curveball. So he's not afraid to challenge guys with his fastball. Very different kind of knuckleballer. Just wants to throw strikes. Is not afraid of anything. Does absolutely no video work and no scouting. He just goes out there and throws the ball.
It's certainly different, and it works for him, or at least has worked to this point in the year. You know, you mentioned the Red Sox issues with the rotation, but you can take a look around this division and say that there hasn't been a dominant rotation. I mean, the Yankees have had their issues. The Orioles, aside from Chris Tillman, most of the guys as a group are averaging nearly a 5 ERA, and Marcus Stroman has struggled at the top of the rotation for Toronto, and there really hasn't been a dominant starter, although J-Hap has been good. I mean, the question is, okay, which rotation is going to find its way in this division?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, as you said, Toronto, you know, Stroman has had his problems. They've probably pitched the best of anybody, you know, in the division. But they all need that one more starter, at least one more starter in their rotations. And I think if someone can get that guy, they're going to be above the pack. I mean, Toronto did it with Price last year. And whoever does it this year, although there's no Price out there to be had, really, is going to do it. But it's an offensive division. There's no question about that. They bash the ball, and the Red Sox were just winning games incredibly first 2 months of the year with their offense, even though they still had pitching problems. And those pitching problems have remained, and their offense has gone down a little bit. So that's why they're struggling.
And you take a look at this division – Boston would seem to be best positioned in terms of trying to acquire pitching because they do have, depending on where you read, five of the top 35 or 40 or 50 prospects in the game. How likely, based on David Dombrowski's reputation, are you to see them make a move and acquire the pitching? And if so, who do you think is the most likely guy?
You know, I'm not sure that any of the people out there are worth getting. I mean, you're not going to get Jose Fernandez. You're not going to get Chris Sale. You might be able to get Sonny Gray, but even that's up in the air. So the type of guy you're going to get is like an Irvin Santana, for instance. I think he's the most realistic guy for any team to get, and he's more of a middle or back end type of star, a veteran pitcher who can definitely help you. So that's the kind of guy I think that the Red Sox, Orioles, Blue Jays will go after. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't give up one of my best prospects for him. You know, you might give up a couple of mid-level type guys, but you wouldn't give up your best guys for him.
Well, it's certainly going to be an interesting watch. And Nick, we appreciate a few minutes on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Thank you very much.
And that's Nick Cofardo with the Boston Globe, now joining us from MLB.com and MLB Network to look at the national scene. Richard Justice. Richard, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to. Thank you for having me, Neil.
First of all, the thing that stands out to me on this latest kind of checkpoint of the season is the fact that so many teams have large division leads at this point. Is that what's most surprising to you in the American League?
Yeah, it is, and Neil, and it's a reminder, and the leads are pretty large in the National League, too. It's a reminder that the wild card berths had been a lifesaver. You still have 20 teams within the five games of a playoff berth. So, you know, otherwise you'd have teams backing off and looking to refigure for next year and all that. Instead, you got teams that are saying, hey, we're a five-game win streak away from being right back in this thing.
Indeed. And you take a look at the three teams that are leading the American League divisions, Baltimore, Texas, and Cleveland. Obviously, Cleveland is the hottest team. Which one do you think is the best team right now of the three?
Cleveland's rotation, I think this is where you always start. Even in spring training, you look at Cleveland's rotation and said, they might be as good as the Mets. And they're just airtight. They're perfect. They're on a roll now where everything is clicking. Chisenhall's great, Kipnis. But I think their pitching is so good that they're the best team. Now, you know, October is the reset button. It's who's healthy, who's rested, all of that. So October is different. But right now, they're the team positioned best to do well. Texas has three starting pitchers on the disabled list. I think they're going to go out and try to get a starting pitcher somewhere. But, you know, they have the best record in the league. Baltimore, I don't know how they're doing it, Neil. I mean, you know, you and I saw them in spring training. They were a mess. Even if you look at their rotation now, you say, I don't get it. They hit 56 home runs in June. It was like the Indians the Indians and the Orioles are not even playing the same sport. You know, they do it in such a different way. But at some point, you have to look at it and say, okay, they're winning. Boston has some pitching issues. Toronto has some pitching issues. So, you know, maybe there's a different way to skin a cat in this case.
I'll tell you, the one thing that is similar, though, between Cleveland and Baltimore, they catch the ball extremely well. And you know, Bucks teams, I know they rely very heavily on the homer, but their bullpen is great and they're fundamentally sound.
You're absolutely right. You know, when you have Adam Jones in the center and you have J.J. Hardy at shortstop and you have Matt Wieters behind the plate, you have the foundation of a great defense. And then the third baseman, Manny Machado, is one of the great players of this generation and a player, you know, like it's sacrilegious to say in Baltimore, but he makes plays that reminds you of Brooks Robinson. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. And the bullpen is great, even though they've got some injuries now, and no manager in baseball manages the bullpen better than Buck Showalter. So, yeah, you know, while it's easy to go, okay, maybe not the greatest rotation in the world, at the same time, they look at it and say, okay, if Tillman and Gausman and Gallardo are going good down the stretch, hey, we can go into October and we can win a series.
Indeed. And, you know, you look at all the other teams that are now fighting, at least it would appear at this point, for wild card spots. Certainly someone could get hot and catch one of Baltimore and Texas and Cleveland. But among the wild card teams either that are at the top or chasing, who do you like most right now and why?
I think there are teams that are pieces away. I think Kansas City, you know, a lot of injuries they haven't dealt with before. I like Detroit playing better. But I would just say today, I would go with the Red Sox and the Astros. The Astros are 7-17 in April, 17-28 on May 22nd, and have just completely turned it around. And now their rotation is churning out quality stars. Altuve is having an MVP-type season. Boston may be a starting pitcher short from winning the AL East, but they're going to be very aggressive in trying to get a starting pitcher. And all the other teams you like, there are things you like about Toronto, but there are things that give you pause, too. So I would take a Red Sox-Astros wild card game if the season, you know, if I had to pick today.
Certainly it would be entertaining. You mentioned Boston being a pitcher away. You mentioned Texas you think may go out and get a starting pitcher. Among the American League teams, are they the ones that will be most aggressive? And if so, why?
Well, I think a lot of teams will be aggressive. I think Baltimore will be aggressive. I think what's different is Texas has a very deep farm system. Texas really has too many players that are major league ready right now. So they're in a great position to go get a guy. Now, you know, then you say, well, who's the guy? You know, Sonny Gray has had another tough start the last time out. Maybe the Padres trade Drew Pomeranz. Maybe the Rays make somebody available, something like that. But I think I'm not sure that there's going to be this wholesale exchange of pitching because so many teams are in it. And I think Boston has enough players in the farm system to make a deal. Baltimore wants pitching, but Baltimore's farm system is a little more shallow. You know, when teams trade a big league pitcher, they want guys that are close to being big league ready. I think Baltimore has guys that they like, that teams like, but maybe they're 2 years away, and that sometimes is a tough sell.
Richard, and we're speaking with Richard Justice of MLB.com. What do you think of the predicaments that both Toronto and New York are in? Because, you know, the Blue Jays, you could say their window's closing if Bautista and Encarnacion don't re-sign. And the Yankees have this great, you know, triumvirate in their bullpen and some older pieces. What do they do?
You know what I think the Yankees are going to do? I think they're going to stay the course. And I don't think they're going to trade Andrew Miller or Aroldis Chapman. I don't think it's in their DA to take a step back. Now, you know, things can look a lot different on the August 1 trade deadline. But I think what they've done, they're pushing the organizational reset button. They have said, Hal Steinbrenner has said several times, we should not have to have a $200 million payroll to win the World Series. I think the rank of the last 10 World Series champions has been 7th or 8th, something right in there. So it's not strictly about money. So the Yankees have held a nice disciplinary line in terms of staying away from older guys. We got to get younger. But you know what that means? You know, that means you got to draft well. And I think that you can look at them one day and say, okay, Aaron Judge, Greg Bird, who will be back next year, James Caprillion, all these guys, they're not that far away. There is an influx of talent coming. But, you know, young players don't come with guarantees, and they don't all come at the same rate. I think Toronto's in sort of a similar situation in that, are they good enough to win this year? They may be a reliever short. I look at them different ways. They got to get Bautista back on the field. It's clear.
That is Richard Justice of MLB.com, and we certainly thank Richard and all of our guests on today's show, including shortstop Brad Miller, Brian Anderson of Fox Sports Sun,
Durham manager Jarrett Sandberg, the Montgomery hitting coach Dan DeMent, and their pitching coach R.J. Lichtenstein, and also Nick Cofardo of the Boston Globe. Special thanks as well to our producer John Milo. Next week, get to know more about Brandon Guyer. If you ever have something you want to hear on the show, tweet me at Neil Solons. Coming up, the Rays pregame show on the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Driven in the air to center field. Kiermaier going back at the wall, jumps up, and makes the catch.
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at RaysBaseball.com/radio.
Swinging a high fly ball to right field. Back to the wall, and it's gone. Home run. Opposite field homer for Logan Forsythe, and we're all tied.
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.